live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are broadcasting live from our studio inside Renaissance Bank on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta. Folks, if you're tired of the big bank experience, you know what I mean. 1-800 numbers, artificial voices. No, we're not going to let you talk to a live person. Here's a different experience, and you can have that by going to renaissancebank.com and actually calling one of their local offices, some 200 across the South, ready to serve you, and talk to a live person, and they'll be happy to make an appointment with you and talk about how they can serve you and your needs. And Renaissance is big enough to serve pretty much anything you'll throw at them, but small enough to do it personally. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. Now I want to welcome an old friend of the show, Portia Parker Griffin. Portia is the founder, CEO of Fly High Coaching. Let's fly high, Portia. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me back, John. I'm excited to be here again.
I'm excited to have you, and I love the name of your business, Fly High Coaching. But for those that don't know you, let's give them a little introduction as to how you're serving folks from your practice.
Great. Well, thank you. So, as you mentioned, I am the CEO and founder of Fly High Coaching and also the Millennial Performance Institute. We offer customized solutions for what I call the nagging people problems. Those areas like leadership development, employee turnover, conflict resolution, and multi-generational communication. We do that in a variety of ways. For some of our clients, it might look like offering strategic consulting services around, you know, their talent and talent development. Also, we offer coaching, team coaching, executive coaching, and then customized training as well. So we can really put together a solution just depending on what a business really needs and what they want to focus on.
Wow. A lot to unpack there, but maybe before we get into some of the details of that, let's just talk about, I mean, people hear a lot of these things, and a lot of folks that, you know, say they do some of what you do. What makes you different?
Yeah. So a few things, John. That's a great question because you're right. There are a ton of business coaches, business consultants, and it can get very confusing to know kind of, you know, what people, you know, focus on. So one, we offer comprehensive programs. So, you know, someone can come to us, for example, if they want just one thing, help with executive coaching. But if they want a comprehensive solution, we offer those to help our clients throughout the execution to get the results that they want. So, you know, for example, some of our clients have issues with retention. Right. And I'm sure people on your show, and I know that you're a finance guy at heart, John. So you know about how costly turnover is, training costs, replacing employees. It's a big issue. So, yes, someone can come in and do a quick training on that. Or, you know, we could create a customized program that might include some consulting, some training, some coaching to really get to the core of a problem. And so that's one major point of distinction between us and a lot of other firms. Another one, John, is one of our key areas of focus, and I think we talked about this a little bit last time, is, you know, working with multi-generational workplace issues. So we know that now, especially in the last few years or so, talking about baby boomers, millennials, Gen Zers who are now in the workforce, it's a hot topic. And we've been talking about this and really helping clients with it for years, but really looking at some differences in communication and just some differences among generations, because we find that that's an undercurrent underneath a lot of the other challenges that businesses have. So not a lot of other firms do that. So that's another kind of point of distinction with us.
Let's talk about the multi-generational workplace. And, you know, it seems like everyone that talks about this in terms of the issues they see in their own workplace, their own business, seems to speak about it oppositionally. You know, that there's always conflict between generations. I mean, what do you attribute that to?
Ooh, you make a great point there, John. So I think that at the core, when you really look at what people want, most generations and most people of all generations actually want very similar things. And how they go about communicating what they want or the actions that they take to get that is where we see the differences. For example, you know, we've seen this in our own kind of research, but also research that I've, you know, read and studied from other organizations that, you know, at the end of the day, most people really want to be, to enjoy what they're doing, to work in a workplace that is positive, is productive, you know, and they want to provide, you know, for their family. So pretty much everyone generally wants that. Now, how they go about getting that is where those differences come into play and what people talk a lot about. So when we talk about differences, I'll say that communication is probably the number one difference that we see in terms of preferences of communication, and then how someone would even discuss, you know, a topic, for example. Those are some of the main differences between organizations, what organizations will see, I'll see, between generations.
Sure, sure. That makes sense. One of the key words that I've heard you say here a couple times is communications, and the inability to connect, to communicate with each other, even though, as you say, those goals may be similar down deep.
Right. Absolutely. And that communication shows up in a wide variety of ways. So what's the preference for communication? Is that in person, face to face? Is that over the phone? Is that via email? Is that via text or some other chat, you know, platform? So that's one of the big points, and you're absolutely right.
So let's talk about the big subject that we've been talking about for 15 months or 16 months or so forth, the pandemic, and maybe how do you see the whole issue of return to the office, return to work, whatever you want to call it, and how that's playing multi-generationally?
Ooh, a very big question. So as I'm sure, you know, you've discussed with other people on the show, everyone kind of has their own different opinion when it comes to returning to the workforce. When we look at different generations, you know, everyone is unique on this because everyone also has personal demands, right? Some people have immunocompromised individuals at home. People have, you know, different opinions about the vaccine. People have different opinions on what is an actual safe workplace, you know, what the distance looks like, I should say, in a workplace. Are people wearing masks? Are they not wearing masks? So there are a lot of factors outside of just generations here when we think about return to work and those types of policies and plans that organizations are putting together. One trend that we have seen just across generations, and again, this isn't everyone, but a trend that we have seen is that a lot of times baby boomers prefer that in-person working environment to, you know, actually see people working, see their employees, connect in person a bit more. We find that a lot of millennials and a good percentage of Gen Zers actually don't mind completely remote work. And the idea and some of the differences we've seen there is that they can say, hey, you can see when I'm online on my computer, my productivity is up. Why do I actually have to physically be in an office for you to believe that I'm working? Right. And so that's one kind of main difference we've seen. And then a lot of Gen Xers are kind of in the middle there in terms of, you know, hybrid work, completely in office or remote.
Well, there's I'm curious. This is a question. I mean, which sounds like a statement. It seems to me that maybe people are pigeonholing this question with generations too much. That as you say, we're talking about personal medical issues that each individual has regardless of generation, and the opinions are all over the place regardless of generation. And so it's really a disservice to everyone, whether it's the employer or the employee, to peg it in this question in generationally. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree. I completely agree because you are going to see people across the board. Now, what I mentioned earlier in terms of just some overarching themes, we tend to see it in terms of mindset. But yes, everyone has a unique opinion on this. And one thing, John, to your point about, you know, is it generations and kind of individual, a conversation I've been having with a lot of companies is them really thinking about what work is going to look like moving forward. So are they going to be 100% in person? Are they going to be hybrid, or are they going to be completely remote or allow some employees to work remote? And that's a question that's come up before quite a bit lately. And one major thing that I think a lot of organizations have to think about is, you know, their workforce. So some of our clients have a very specialized workforce to where it's very difficult for them to replace an employee. And if that is the case, offering more initiatives and incentives can be really helpful for them to their current employees so they don't just quit, for example, because it could be years, you know, for some of these companies to replace an individual. So you've really got to look at the market too. One other thing that I say to a lot of our clients is that your best employees are being proactively recruited on LinkedIn. You probably see this too, John, in terms of people trying to sell you things on LinkedIn, but also there are recruiters that just use LinkedIn to help them find qualified candidates. So if you think, well, hey, we're just going to roll out our, we'll just say, back to in-office working plan. We're not going to talk to people. We're just going to roll it out and they've got to like it, you know, regardless of their personal health situation or family situation. You could do that, but you're running a risk by not having that conversation with your employees, because there's someone in their inbox right now saying, hey, come work for our company completely remote. They might even be paying them $5,000 more a year, right? So it's important to think about your workforce as you are considering the back to in-office work plans that you have.
Okay, you're headed where I wanted to go next, Portia, and which is you're good at anticipating, so not surprising, folks. But let's reintroduce you, Portia Parker Griffin, folks. She is the founder and CEO of Fly High Coaching. So I wanted to get to talent acquisition and retention. Now you're not in the recruiting business. You're not in talent acquisition per se, but you help businesses create a better environment and a better culture that hopefully attracts people and helps them stay, right?
Exactly. So we're not a recruiting firm. We do actually partner well with some recruiting firms. And then when we talk with our clients and consult with our clients, you're absolutely right, John. It's about helping them to create a great culture, a great atmosphere where they retain their employees, but also that they are a great place to work so that if they do happen to be using a recruiting firm to help them, you know, find candidates, people are interested in working there. And that's another thing, to go back to your point about generations, that I've seen, you know, when speaking with some of our partners who are in recruiting, one thing they've told me is that, you know, pretty much most of the millennials and Gen Zers that they try to actively recruit, they've all gone online. And if they find a few bad Glassdoor reviews or something, I've been told it's hard to even sell that company to that candidate because they might not be interested, right? So, you know, that culture that you have is not only important for your current employees, but also thinking about attracting other employees.
And this is a little off topic, but I'm sure you've got an opinion on it, and therefore I'm interested in hearing it. Our listeners will be too. How do you feel about active employers actively encouraging their employees to be on LinkedIn, for example, to help that employer brand?
Whew, yes.
How do you feel about that?
You're right. So employer branding, I'm happy that you're familiar with that term, because I was talking to people about employer branding, you know, years ago, and people had no idea what I was talking about. So yes, I think that it can be helpful, but to a degree, right? So there are different extremes, right? So encouraging your employees to be on LinkedIn just for, you know, showing the presence that your organization has can be great. I know a lot of companies actually encourage senior leaders of their team or even like up and coming managers to be what a lot of people call quote unquote thought leaders online. So post articles, for example, on LinkedIn, make thoughtful and insightful posts on LinkedIn because, you know, that reflects positively on the organization, obviously. So doing those things, you know, can be great. Sometimes I have heard that some organizations kind of force their employees onto social media, whether it be Twitter, LinkedIn, or other, you know, platforms, and then force them to post company content, you know, at regular intervals. So those, I think that's a bit sketchier in terms of forcing people to post company content mm-hmm. on a regular basis, whether they're really interested in it or not. But, you know, all in all, it does help the employer brand because people can see, hey, there are real individuals that work there and get an idea of the opinions of some of those individuals.
Sounds like the people that want to go down this road need a third party to look at what they're doing and make sure it passes the, I guess, the authenticity test, if you will, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Is it authentic? And then really, honestly, I would encourage some of those companies, and I know some of them don't because we've had clients tell us this, but really have conversations with their employees because not everyone wants to post every week some of your company content, right? And then there are other employees that might feel great about doing that, but kind of mandating things is where I think it could feel out of integrity or out of, you know, alignment for someone to do.
Okay, I'm going to ask a dumb question, and that's not unusual for me because I'm good at that. Oh, you know, we hear this term employee engagement. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask how you get employees engaged, although you can answer that if you want. What is employee engagement? I mean, how do we know employees are engaged?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So there's a few there. I'll start with what is employee engagement. That's really looking at the relationship between an organization and its employees. So is it a positive relationship? Is it a negative relationship? You know, at a high level, employee engagement is the study of that. And people look into employee engagement in a variety of ways. They might do surveys. So a lot of people do employee engagement surveys or what used to be called employee satisfaction surveys. Sometimes people just kind of have one-on-one, you know, confidential interviews. Some HR departments do that. So really getting an idea of the pulse of the organization and how people are feeling about working there. To get to your question about kind of what is, you know, an engaged employee, for example, Gallup is an organization that is really kind of one of the leading organizations when it comes to employee engagement. They've got a lot of great research out there, but an engaged employee is an employee who is enthusiastic about their work and their workplace. Gallup also shows that there are some other categories, right? There are, you know, disengaged employees and actively disengaged employees as well, or employees who are not engaged, I'll say, and then employees who are actively disengaged. So we can kind of intuit what those mean, right? At the other end of the spectrum, if someone's not enthusiastic about their workplace, an actively disengaged employee is one who is actively trying to sabotage the organization. They're more likely to speak negatively about the organization to clients, to customers, to other employees, right? And kind of pass that negativity around. They're more inclined to steal from an organization or, have a larger rate of absenteeism, right? Not coming in, calling into work. So all of that, as you can probably see, leads to financial outcomes for the business. Mm-hmm. So really looking at, are your employees engaged, is not only, kind of just looking at what people used to call soft skills or people used to think of as kind of fluffy hand-holding stuff. It's really important because it determines a lot of kind of key business outcomes that are on the financial end.
Yeah, and I think it's employee engagement's like a lot of issues we talk about, right? I mean, it's we think about it, it's either yin or yang. It's either, one or the other, one or zero, right? I mean, it's very binary. It's either someone that's really enthusiastic all the time or someone who's, as you say, stealing from the company or whatever. Mm-hmm. Most people are somewhere in the middle.
Right.
Right. So it's really about moving them, right? And focusing on that group and trying to make sure they're more engaged than not most often, right?
Exactly. So that middle category that you're talking about is employees who are what they call not engaged. So these are employees who are kind of passively going through the motions. So I like to say clocking in, clocking out, collecting a paycheck. You're right. They're not going to necessarily go above and beyond in what they do, but they're not going to sabotage the company either. And yes, most people fall into that group. And you're very astute. It's to a company's advantage to think about how they can take those employees who are not engaged and help them to become engaged.
So, Portia, let's talk specifically about a little more specifically about your practice. Talk about the ideal client for you. What's an ideal client for you?
Yeah. So, we've worked with a wide variety of clients in a wide variety of industries. But when I think about most of our clients are generally small or mid-sized businesses. They generally have between 25 to about 600-700 employees. And we look at employee count because of what we were just talking about in terms of employee engagement. In looking at that employee count, you can see if a company might have, either some challenges around engagement or just know, hey, at that size, it's important to really dig deeper into employee engagement. Also at that size, small to mid-sized businesses, generally, they may or may not have an HR person, and we're not HR, so we're not competing with a company's, HR manager or anything like that. We really are supporting the CEO, leadership, and sometimes the HR team when it comes to specific talent development initiatives. So that HR person, generally in a lot of our clients, that person is a little overworked, right? They are hiring, they're handling payroll, they're handling benefits. They don't really have time to talk about employee engagement like we are. They don't really have time to talk about that new group of managers that the company just promoted who have never led people before.
Yeah.
And how can we support that new group of leaders to make sure that they're successful in an organization when they don't have experience with people leadership, right? So for our average client, their HR person or department doesn't really have time to dig into those sort of things. And that's where we come in and help.
So as a company grows, what's the number of employees that they typically get to when culture changes and just size starts having an impact, I guess what I'm getting to is that business owner out there that's listening to us and thinking, I want to be proactive. You know, I want to get, I want to get Porsche on the scene before I have, you know, internal engagement and performance issues that you help with. You know, what's that employee number typically?
Yeah, good question. So it really depends on the industry, because as you know, the actual industry and the business that an organization is in kind of determines some of that complexity, right? But in general, I would say at the lower end, it is about 20 to 25 employees, because at that point, it's beyond, you know, someone and maybe, you know, their good friend, their cousin, a few great hires that they've made. It's really an organization at that point, or a company at that point, that has its own culture. And it's not necessarily just the culture of the CEO or the founder. We've got a whole group of people kind of working together. So that is generally kind of where someone would start to see some of the challenges that we are talking about, but sometimes it's smaller than that. And then definitely larger than 25 employees at 50, 100, like I mentioned, 600, 700. There's a lot of complexity to it. There are a lot of variables. And so having some outside help to come in also with an outsider's point of view, because I'm sure you've seen this too, John, a lot of people aren't necessarily comfortable telling the CEO how they feel about the environment or the culture. And a lot of times they're not even comfortable talking to somebody in HR about that either.
Right.
For fear of retaliation from their manager, someone else at the company. So having a third party to come in and kind of talk to people or facilitate some of those surveys can be really beneficial.
Well, and when you got 25 people, you got 25 different ideas on what culture is, right?
Right, exactly.
So it's I hear you. So someone calls you and they want to talk about maybe engaging you. Let's talk about how that process works or that conversation unfolds.
Yeah, great. So for every business that, you know, thinks that they would like to kind of discuss this a bit more, generally when they reach out to us, we take a look at, you know, their organization and all of that. And most of the time we have a complimentary strategy call is what I'll say. And that's where we just hop on the line. Generally, it's either me and someone in leadership or someone in sometimes HR leadership, and just talk about what challenges they might have seen. Or we generally like to discuss the biggest area where they'd like to see a shift, right? So whether that be employee engagement, whether that be talking more about management, leadership, helping to improve communication. Every business is a little different. And so we talk specifically on about what that looks like for them.
Terrific. Well, then it's time for people to call you.
Let's love to talk to them.
Well, let's get the most important question, which is for those that would like to be in touch and learn more about you and your services. How can they do that?
Great. Well, they can, we mentioned LinkedIn, so I'm on LinkedIn. But our company website is Fly, that's FLY-HIGH. Coaching, spelled all the way out, .com. So you can find all of our contact information there. And then also, if you want to learn more about the multi-generational aspect of what we talked about, you can find that right on the site as well.
Terrific. Porsche Parker Griffin, folks. She's the founder and CEO of Fly High Coaching. Porsche, it's been great. Thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you, John, for having me again.
Thank you. Hey, folks, just a quick reminder, if you've got some administrative tasks that are dragging your business down, and they're dragging your business down because you as the business owner might be doing them and you shouldn't be, maybe you need a virtual assistant. Well, over at Office Angels, they call virtual assistants angels. They fly in and get the job done in a heavenly way and fly back out. They do it on a as-needed or ongoing basis. and it's all managed by Chief Executive Angel Essie Escobedo. Essie's been around 21 years now. She's terrific. I know that personally because I use her services. So there you go. Just call Essie at 770-442-9246 and tell her I sent you and just explain what your problem is. And she'll be glad to help you. If you're shy and want to see the website first, go to officeangels.us. And folks, just another quick reminder as we wrap up here, you can find the show North Fulton Business Radio on all the major podcast apps. North Fulton Business Radio is a search term. That's how you could find the show. We would love it if you would go on and give us a 5-star review. I'm making that bold request, not for me, not for Business Radio X, but for our great guests, guests like Portia, who do great work and deserve to be found. And your plugging the show helps people find the show so they can hear of the great work that Portia and our other great business leaders that we've had on the show do every day. So for my guest, Portia Parker Griffin, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.